taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution and we teach a rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, I don't remember where I heard this or who told me this, but I remember someone telling me once that if you find yourself in a pit, the first thing you need to do is stop digging. And America is hopefully finding that it's in a pit. At least some of us are recognizing that it's in a pit. Now, the good news is our pit is not nearly as deep and as dark as much of the world. But the sad news is we seem to be digging with vigor. It seems like we are trying harder and harder to turn America into more of a despotic, tyrannical, government-run, government-dictated country, and where the people's rights don't matter. The people's rights are secondary to the whim of government, where the very idea of you know, justice and liberty are anathema to those who wish to rule us rather than govern, who wish to exercise absolute power rather than just powers. So I thought today would be a good time to take a look, get ourselves a bearing on what the way things are supposed to be, then look at some of the headlines, get behind the stories to the truth, to the facts, and see A, how things are going wrong, and then B, what we can do about it. And I think the best place to start actually is with the Declaration of Independence. Remember, this is a document we used to justify our separation from Great Britain back in 1776. The Lee Resolution had already passed on July 2nd that said the colonies were now 13 free and independent states. And this document was the announcement as the Declaration says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which connect them to another and to assume the powers of the earth, a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation. And I think that's an important point. We need to declare what impels us to action, whether that action be a separation or, in our case, a restoration. Now, the second paragraph of the Declaration says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And most Americans know this. We remember this. These are famous words. Sadly, the following words seem to not be as well known. "That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." See, we create governments. Governments don't create us. They don't create themselves. Governments aren't even created by countries. It's the people, when we declared ourselves free, to say, okay, we need a government. We need a body of people to exercise our sovereign power in a formalized manner. In other words, we didn't want anarchy. We didn't want everybody making their own rules. We wanted a republic where the power of the people would be temporarily and limitedly vested in a group of men, and now men and women, who would exercise that power within the confines that we established for them. We established government, and we consent to their powers. And anything they do beyond that consent is unjust. Now, how do we give that consent? We gave that consent when we formed those governments via constitution. Whether that be the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of your state, the American people created a government with the primary purpose of protecting their rights and delegated to that government certain just powers. and any powers they exercise beyond that are unjust powers. Now, at some point in the Declaration, they list the grievances, the reasons what that impelled them to separation. And of course, in school, at least at my age, we were all taught that the reason we separated from Great Britain was taxation without representation, which is in there. I do agree. Taxation without representation is in the Declaration of Independence. It's number 17 out of 27. It didn't make the top three, the top five, even the top half. But the very first grievance listed against the king is that he has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Now, if you go back to the website, constitutionstudy.com, back on July 4th, I released an essay called The Redeclaration of Independence, where I went through the Declaration of Independence, and I was able to apply all of our grievances against King George to some entity in Washington, D.C. And when it comes to refusing his assent to laws most wholesome and necessary for the public good, well, in this case, it is the judiciary. It is judges that are doing this, and it's not just at the federal level, it's at the state level, but our judiciary branch has run amok. Now, those in government, and indeed the American people as a whole, have been brainwashed. They've been trained and indoctrinated into believing that judges are all powerful. We even go so far as to have the vast majority of politicians, pundits, judges, media refer to the opinion of a court as a ruling. The problem is courts don't rule. And they don't rule for a very good reason, because that would make them kings and queens, not judges. Now, in his Federalist Paper number 78, Alexander Hamilton talks about the judiciary. And at one point in this essay, he says, "Whoever attentively considers the different departments of power must perceive that in a government in which they are separated from each other, the judiciary, from the nature of its functions, will always be the least dangerous to the political rights of the Constitution, because it will be least in a capacity to annoy or injure them." Now, consider what Mr. Hamilton is saying. He says, of our three branches of government, the least dangerous will be the courts. It's supposed to be the courts. Why? Because they have no power, no capacity to injure your rights, to injure rights protected by the Constitution. Now, he goes on to explain. He starts with, the executive not only dispenses the honors, but holds a sword of the community. The legislature not only commands the purse, but prescribes the rules by which the duties and rights of every citizen are to be regulated. The judiciary, on the contrary, has no influence over either the sword or the purse, no direction either of the strength or of the wealth of the society, and can take no active resolution whatever. Now think about that for a second. According to Alexander Hamilton, in the American system of government, where we have separated executive, legislative, and judicial, the judiciary has no power over the sword or the purse. They cannot direct either the strength or the wealth of society, and in fact, they can take no active resolution whatever. Now compare that to how the courts are treated today. And what I find very interesting is we find the courts have no active resolution. They have no direct power. It is the legislative, the executive, and the people who simply bow to their will. See, Alexander Hamilton went on to say, it may be truly said to have neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend upon the aid of the executive arm, even for the efficacy of his judgments. Well, what we see today is courts, they don't even need the executive arm, because we voluntarily subject ourselves to the will, to the whim of judges. A judge says, and we do. we may question the validity of the judgment, but we never seem to question the fact that we have to, whether or not we have to follow that judgment. And in fact, when President Biden ignored the opinion of the Supreme Court, the idea that the CDC was not granted legal authority to issue an eviction moratorium, he ignored it. And people were apoplectic. How dare he ignore the courts? How dare he ignore our rulers? But you see, they're not rulers. And with that understanding that courts have no power, they have only judgment, especially at the federal level. Let's take a look at some cases. I'm actually going to start with a case that actually is in the Texas court. See, Texas recently passed a law that limited abortions once a heartbeat was detected in the child. The child in the womb, a heartbeat's detected, that's a sign of life, therefore that life must be protected unless you're dealing with a medical emergency. Well, of course, this really honked off the pro-abortion in this country, and I've seen a lot of apoplectic and beyond-the-pale reactions. But here we have a Texas judge, and he has issued a restraining order on certain pro-life groups and people affiliated with those groups not to actually follow the law. In other words, the Texas law was unique because not only was it based on a heartbeat, but rather than making it a criminal offense, they made the abortion process a civil offense. And they even limited it so that government officials could not sue. It was up to private citizens and private organizations to sue if the law was violated. So here we have a Texas judge. And he issued a restraining order against the Texas right to life and certain people affiliated to it. Now, again, there's been a lot of hyperbole, so I actually went to the judge's order, the restraining order that he issued. And in reading the findings, he said, the court finds that SBA creates a probable, irreparable, and imminent injury in the interim for which plaintiffs, that's Planned Parenthood of Texas, and their physician staff and patients throughout Texas have no adequate remedy at law if plaintiffs, their physicians and staff are subject to private enforcement lawsuits against them under SB 8. So he says, listen, if people are actually allowed to sue Planned Parenthood, their doctors, their staff, their physicians, they have no remedy. Now, I find that kind of interesting because, well, a suit is not a finding. And if they're sued, well, yes, they have to put forth a defense. But he's saying that is an irreparable harm. He goes on to say there are no monetary damages sufficient to undo the injury to the plaintiffs, their physician and staff. Well, I find that very interesting since the primary cost to the defendant, Planned Parenthood, would be monetary. What other damages would Planned Parenthood and their doctors and staff have? They haven't lost a child. What have they actually lost? If they're sued, well, they've lost time. Yes, okay. They've lost the money it takes to defend themselves in a lawsuit. And then if the lawsuit finds against them, they are fined. Everything there is monetary, but the judge says that money damages are insufficient to repair the injury, to undo the injury, which apparently to Planned Parenthood is almost entirely monetary. I don't know. He doesn't mention what other injuries they receive other than monetary is obvious. Now, he does go on to say the court further finds that granting this request preserves the status quo preceding the controversy and follows precedent of the Supreme Court of Texas. Okay, it does find that it's the status quo, but that's the very status quo that the people of Texas, through their representatives in the legislature, are trying to fix. See, they're saying that there's no way you could repay Planned Parenthood and their doctors and staff for being sued, and so we need to establish the status quo. Well, let me ask you, Judge here. What about the injury to the child? You have a child with a heartbeat in the womb. Tell me, how does your temporary restraining order prevent them from irreparable injury? See, at least Planned Parenthood can be recompensed for loss of business, for loss of for court costs and legal costs. Absolutely. How do you recompense the child, the living child in the womb that is now dead? See, that's the problem I have, is we have a judge making a political move here. Because the very idea that I don't see in this, and granted, you know, maybe I'm missing something, but I don't see how Planned Parenthood loses anything but money if they are sued. Well, maybe they lose some reputation, but let's face it, Planned Parenthood's reputation has never been based on legal findings. So primarily they're losing money. Yet if you're not allowed to prevent abortions on living human beings, the loss to the child is irreparable. There is no way to compensate the child for its death. But what I find interesting here is primarily what you have is you have a judge standing athwart the legislature of the state. Now, this is a Texas judge, which means supposedly they are peers with the legislature. And what do you have? You have a judge who has refused his assent to a law, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. There's nothing I've found in this order that says, that describes what is the injury to Planned Parenthood that could not be recompensed. There is none. There's not even discussion of what happens to the child in the womb. Not a discussion, not a consideration. That's not a surprise. So we have a judge placing themselves above the representatives of the people and standing athwart good legislation. Now, I've talked previously about the legislation, and I'm working on an article that does a deeper dive into this legislation. So if you want more, keep your ears open. I will have it in an upcoming episode. The legislation's not perfect. But here you have a judge preventing you from petitioning your government for a redress of grievance, because the judge thinks that not being able to get an abortion is an irreparable injury to the person providing the abortion. It's not even a question of an injury to the mother who can't get an abortion, because the mother is not, you can't sue the mother under SB 8. You can only sue the abortion provider or someone complicit with providing it. This is nothing more than a judge refusing their assent. And the interesting thing is, I'd like to see the reaction of the legislature, because the legislature should stand up and say, excuse me, judge, you did not provide any basis for your finding that this causes an irreparable harm. I want to see this judge held to account. I'm sorry, I've been using the term he. I believe it's Maya. I believe it may be a she, in which case I apologize. But you have a judge with no legal finding, no basis for this lawsuit other than apparently a desire to promote abortion. a desire to prevent any restrictions on abortion, which is not the job of a judge. Lawmaking is the responsibility of the legislature. So when is the legislature going to do the right thing? You see, the judges were not given the legal authority to simply dismiss laws they don't like. And I make that point because the only quote-unquote law, which is actually just a precedent, is the court says that, yep, you know what? If we grant this request, we will preserve the status quo, which was a precedent established by the Supreme Court of Texas. Okay, but why is it the court's determination that status quo is correct? If the people through their legislature are trying to change the status quo, why does the court feel it must restore the status quo? Who said the status quo is right and just? See, this is not based on law. This is simply based on the judge's opinion. Well, what will we do about it? Now, I'm curious. Two things I want is I'd like to hear from the Governor Abbott saying, okay, that's a nice opinion, but you didn't base that on law. Therefore, we're going to ignore it. Your TRO is meaningless because you can't enforce it. You need us to enforce it, and you haven't based it on any law. And yes, there will be a hue and a cry. But if you find yourself in a pit, you must stop digging. We are in a pit of out-of-control judges who are ruling from the bench, who are using their position to legislate and to manipulate and to refuse their assent to laws, not because they violate the supreme law, either of Texas or of the United States, but because they apparently violate their opinions, their desires, their sense of how things should be. We have judges acting as kings and queens. And if we don't stop digging and allowing judges to act like kings and queens, we will find ourselves in the same despotic realm as places like the Soviet Union, Communist China, North Korea, Venezuela, Iran, because we refuse to stop digging while we watch these people bury us under their exercise of powers that are unjust, because we did not delegate to them. We are not subjects of the court. We are citizens. We are the masters. We are the creators of the court, just as we're the creators of the executive and the legislative. And it's about time the people of Texas and the people of the nation as a whole started treating those in government as their employees. That includes telling the governor, listen, this TRO is garbage. It is based on nothing. The only thing they have is a precedent from the Supreme Court of Texas that it is possible to preserve the status quo. Big, fat, hairy deal. The status quo at one point in this country said that slaves weren't human, said that you can inter people because of their national heritage. And now, what do we have? We can preserve the status quo because we don't like where this is going. That is not the role of a court. Let us stop digging and find the truth. Now, I've already mentioned my website, constitutionstudy.com. Please head over there. You'll find articles and videos about a lot of things dealing from a constitutional standpoint. They are all there for you to freely use and to freely share. That's why I put them up there. I think it's part of that need is to understand so that we can make these intelligent decisions. So please head to constitutionstudy.com. You know what you can do there? Go to the Ask a Question. You'll find in the menu bar, you'll find Ask a Question. If you have a question you'd like me to cover here on the program, go there, ask a question, simply note that it's from the radio program, and I'll do my best to answer that question for you right here on the air. Now, before I go, I want to remind you to check out healthycell.com/outloud. They've developed a new way of looking at vitamins. Forget the pills, forget the water. Take a nice, simple, travel-ready gel pack. Take it as a shot, mix it in a drink. It's easy to use, it's easy to carry, and they've got wonderful formulas. For example, now I tend to sleep pretty well. My wife has always had a problem sleeping. She loves the REM sleep. It helps her get to sleep quicker, to stay asleep longer, so she can wake up refreshed and ready to go. So as an America Out Loud listener, you go to healthycell.com/outloud. You'll get 20% off your first order. Try the REM sleep. If you have any problem sleeping, give that a try. I love it. It makes me nice and drowsy so I can drift right off to sleep. And you can get 20% off that first order just by going to healthycell.com/outloud.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about digging holes and how our rights and our liberties, our freedoms seem to be, we're digging deeper and deeper into the hole of tyranny and despotism, and the first thing we need to start doing is to stop digging. And we're focusing a lot on the judicial branch today because it seems to be one of the areas that's gotten completely out of control. Alexander Hamilton said that the courts have neither force nor will, only judgment. Yet, lately it seems, well, for many decades it seems, the American people at all level have bowed to the opinion of judges, have allowed judges to treat their opinions as law, and now allow them to simply make up the rules as they go along. For example, a federal judge in California simply dismissed any potential juror who would not receive the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, the judge said that his aim was to keep jurors and their families healthy. But what does the COVID-19 vaccine have to do with keeping people healthy? We've already proven that the vaccine does not prevent you from getting the disease, that it only mitigates the symptoms. So how does having a non-vaccinated juror on a jury threaten anyone else? If they wish to have, if other jurors have the vaccine, well, maybe they'll get sick, but they won't be hospitalized and it won't be too bad. But if they decided not to get the vaccine, that's their own decision. So what's interesting about this is we're now creating a two-tiered society. We're saying, if you don't bow to government pressure and take the vaccine, you no longer get to participate in society. Now, many of you may be saying, hey, that's a great way to get out of jury duty. Except jury duty should not be simply a nuisance. It is an important check and balance on government. See, it's not the government that convicts you of a crime. It's a jury. It's literally if you're accused of a crime, if you're charged with a crime, a jury trial means your future is in the hands of a jury of citizens. And now we're saying that citizens that for whatever reason decide not to get the vaccine may not be allowed to participate. How is that fair? How is that not a violation of the Sixth Amendment, which says, in all criminal trials, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed? We're basically saying now, well, impartial doesn't mean you can question the government and their vaccine mandates. This judge has truly put the myth and misinformation coming out of the CDC and WHO ahead of the law. And both the prosecution and defense in the trial backed their decision. See, California has now become a two-tiered state. Either you are a subject of the state government or you're not a citizen. Or you're not fully a citizen. You don't get all the rights. You're not treated the same. You're treated as a second-class person if you don't get a vaccine. How can you have a representative jury if someone is not allowed to serve in the jury because they didn't get the vaccine? Now, I don't know the details of this case. I don't know what this case was about. But again, it's a question of based not on facts, not on science, not on data, but on the opinion of bureaucrats that happen to have MDs, we now have a judge turning unvaccinated citizens into second-class people. How far is it from not being allowed to serve on juries to being forced to sit in the back of the bus? To not being allowed at certain lunch counters, to having to use a different water fountain for fear that you may infect someone. This is digging. And allowing this to stand is the American people allowing further digging into tyranny. So this is a federal judge. Let me ask you. The people of America, how many of you are contacting your representatives to consider articles of impeachment for this judge? Tell me, under what law does the judge have the authority to dismiss people for a medical condition, a medical decision? See, what the judge has forgotten is, well, we want to keep people healthy. Where is the probable cause that unvaccinated people will make other people sick? Where? It's nowhere. This is made up nonsense, hyperbole, and fear. Now, a federal judge in Ohio tried the same thing when he ordered that all jurors be vaccinated, but he did reverse it after several of the defendants argued that it would skew the jury. You know what? It's about time the American people start saying, enough! Go to your representatives, and if not a full impeachment, there must be some action that can be taken against this judge. These are federal judges. That means they fall under Article 3 of the Constitution. Now, Article 3, Section 1 says, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges of both the Supreme and inferior court shall hold their offices during good behavior. This is bad behavior, ladies and gentlemen. There must be something done. If we allow judges to act like kings and queens, making up rules as they go along, then we are not the land of the free. This is not self-government. This is an oligarchy. We are digging a pit to tyranny, and when we allow others to continue to dig that pit in our name, we are responsible. It's time we stop sitting back and just saying, well, The court ruled. No, the court didn't rule. The court opined, and it did so badly. And that must be called to account. If they are not accountable, I was asked during an interview a while back if we should have an independent judiciary. No. The judiciary must be dependent on the people who created it. We must determine what is good behavior and what is bad behavior, and we must hold them accountable for their bad behavior, or otherwise all we do is turn them into kings and queens, or as I like to call them, high priests in black robes, ruling over the American people like we're their subjects. They're not the only one. A federal judge issued an order blocking the order of Tennessee Governor Bill Lee that allows parents to opt out of mask requirements in school. Now, I've read this executive order. It's very simple. It basically says that based on the Constitution and laws of Tennessee, he orders that a student's parent or guardian shall have the right to opt out of any order or requirement for a student in kindergarten through 12th grade to wear a face covering at school, on a school bus, or at school functions by affirmatively notifying in writing the local education agency or personnel at the school's at the student's school. All right, so it's a positive. In other words, you wear a mask unless your parents opt you out. Well, this judge, this federal judge, claims that this is a violation of the Americans with Disability Act and issues a temporary restraining order. Now, something there just smelled wrong. So how can this be a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act? So I read the TRO for you. You can thank me for that. It's not a lot of fun, but I did. And under the background, the judge lies. He said, as of mid-August, Shelby County, which, by the way, is Memphis, Tennessee, had over 1,400 school-aged children diagnosed with COVID-19. The children in Shelby County, Tennessee, are uniquely vulnerable to the risk of COVID-19 due to a variety of factors, starting with the fact that children under the age of 12 cannot be vaccinated. All right, well, let's stop. Let's go back to the CDC data. I question the 1,400 school-age students, because looking at the data from the CDC, four school-age age groups, right, basically 5 through 17, the percentage of cases is roughly about 3-4% of all the cases. So I'm not sure where the judge gets this 14,000. I don't know the ages, but all right, let's, you know, but again, the young, the school age are almost the lowest rate of cases by age group, right? From 5 to 8, it runs between 4.6% and 2.6%. They're not the ones getting COVID. They're not the ones getting cases. But this judge makes it look like, oh my God, we've got all these cases because they can't be vaccinated. By the way, vaccinations that the CDC even now says doesn't prevent you from getting COVID. It just prevents you from being hospitalized or being seriously sick. Now, he talks about children in Shelby County are more likely to have risk factors. Really? So you're telling me in Memphis, Tennessee, you've got an incredible number of students with obesity, diabetes, hypertension, poor diet, asthma, immune suppression. Where's the data? Show it. I'd love to see it. But here's the part that really got me. See, the person that sued, the plaintiff, is a 13-year-old boy attending West Middle School, a public school within Shelby County. Now, this student has a disability, and they are currently on chemotherapy. Now, I feel terrible. I've seen what chemotherapy does to people. It's rough. It's terrible. I understand. But they go on to say that this student, despite being vaccinated, is still at heightened risk for severe injury if they contract COVID, right? Their immune system suppressed. That's absolutely true. And the student cannot wear a mask due to his disability. And then there's a second student who has a chromosomal abnormality that causes medical problems if they get a fever. Now, both of these students are enrolled in Shelby School. Therefore, they're subject to the county health department. And this judge is saying, because you have two sick kids in school, the entire Shelby County health educational system must be masked because two students maybe are at higher risk for COVID-19. We're going to deprive the liberty of 99 and God knows how many percent of the students in Shelby County, Tennessee, because two kids have a unique medical condition. But heaven forbid we say, you know what, if going to school would be dangerous, you should stay home. No. We must mask the entire population to protect these two students. Now, don't get me wrong. I feel bad for these students. There is little that is worse than a sick child. But the only thing worse than a sick child are parents using that sick child to deprive the rights of the vast majority of the students for whatever reason they come up with. I'm sorry, there are much better and more efficient ways to deal with educating these two outlying students than to have a judge simply come in and say, you know what, I don't like that. We're going to restrain everybody because these two students have a problem. The executive order was issued just because places like Shelby County want to be tyrants. They want to order people around. Forget the studies that show that masks don't work. Forget the studies that show that masks are actually detrimental to children, especially young, very young children. Forget the fact that most of these masks don't stop the spread of COVID. They're too large to prevent the spread of COVID. We don't care about actual science. We're going to listen to scientists. We're going to listen to scientism. And we're going to destroy rights and liberty in America because of this. And Shelby County was trying to do that. The governor said no. And now we have a federal judge sticking his nose in saying, I'm sorry, the federal government allows me to tell you that your rights of your students don't matter. This is a violation of the Fifth Amendment. This TRO is a violation of the Fifth Amendment. And what this judge has done is commit a crime. He is depriving the vast majority of the students in Shelby County, Tennessee. He's depriving the parents and guardians of those students to their liberty and their property in order to protect two students, in order to theoretically protect two students. Because you know what he hasn't shown is any actual evidence of probable cause that masking those students will keep these kids from getting sick. This is a judge run amok. This is absolutely a judge run amok. And as far as I'm concerned, they can take that TRO and stick it. Tell me, where in the Constitution is a federal judge authorized to override the laws of the United States? And then there's a second student who has a chromosomal abnormality that causes medical problems if they get a fever. Now, both of these students are enrolled in Shelby School. Therefore, they're subject to the county health department. And this judge is saying, because you have two sick kids in school, the entire Shelby County health educational system must be masked because two students maybe are at higher risk for COVID-19. We're going to deprive the liberty of 99 and God knows how many percent of the students in Shelby County, Tennessee, because two kids have a unique medical condition. But heaven forbid we say, you know what, if going to school would be dangerous, you should stay home. No, no, no. We must mask the entire population to protect these two students. Now, don't get me wrong. I feel bad for these students. There is little that is worse than a sick child. But the only thing worse than a sick child are parents using that sick child to deprive the rights of the vast majority of the students for whatever reason they come up with. I'm sorry, there are much better and more efficient ways to deal with educating these two outlying students than to have a judge simply come in and say, you know what, I don't like that. We're going to restrain everybody because these two students have a problem. The executive order was issued just because places like Shelby County want to be tyrants. They want to order people around. Forget the studies that show that masks don't work. Forget the studies that show that masks are actually detrimental to children, especially young, very young children. Forget the fact that most of these masks don't stop the spread of COVID. They're too large to prevent the spread of COVID. We don't care about actual science. We're going to listen to scientists. We're going to listen to scientism, and we're going to destroy rights and liberty in America because of this. And Shelby County was trying to do that. The governor said no. And now we have a federal judge sticking his nose in saying, I'm sorry, the federal government allows me to tell you that your rights of your students don't matter. This is a violation of the Fifth Amendment. This TRO is a violation of the Fifth Amendment. And what this judge has done is commit a crime. He is depriving the vast majority of the students in Shelby County, Tennessee. He's depriving the parents and guardians of those students to their liberty and their property in order to protect two students, in order to theoretically protect two students. Because you know what he hasn't shown is any actual evidence of probable cause that masking those students will keep these kids from getting sick. This is a judge run amok. This is absolutely a judge run amok. And as far as I'm concerned, they can take that TRO and stick it. Tell me, where in the Constitution is a federal judge authorized to override the laws of the United States? Now, the Americans with Disability Act, Title II, says no qualified individual with a disability shall, by reason of such disability, be excluded from participation in or denied the benefits of services or programs or activities of a public entity or be subject to discrimination by any such entity. Well, no one's discriminating against them. No one's saying you can't go to school. No one's saying that you know, we won't make some accommodation for your disability. But we're saying you can't use your disability as the authority to infringe on the rights of the rest of the citizens. Now, again, I feel for these kids, and I do want them to get a good education. But that doesn't mean you get to hogtie the rest of the population because the parents of these kids are afraid they might get sick. That is an abuse of power. That is an illegitimate use of the law. They're not being discriminated against. No one's telling them they can't go to school because of their disability. No one's telling them they can't have access. They are literally telling everyone else, you don't get access unless you do it our way because of a weird interpretation of this federal law. Now, before I go, I want to talk about one other case. And believe it or not, it's good news. It's potentially good news. It's very interesting. This case actually comes out of Saginaw, Michigan. It's a case in the Sixth Circuit Court of Allison Patricia Taylor versus the City of Saginaw. And I heard about this, and I found it very curious. I had to go in and research the opinion because I found it very interesting. basically, this lady has a number of parking tickets. She's received several parking tickets from the city of Saginaw for leaving her car in the downtown area. Now, here's where life gets interesting. See, she complained under federal law 42 U.S.C. 1983, which is the law that allows you to sue a government agency for violating a right protected under the Constitution or laws of the United States. And it's actually become a class action suit, claiming that the chalking of her tires violate the Fourth Amendment. I found this very interesting, and I had to think, I was thought about it, and I looked at it, and the district court said, listen, you know, hey, chalking a tire, well, let's understand, the Fourth Amendment means you're secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. You're in your person's houses, papers, and effects. So the claim is that chalking of a tire is a search, and since there's no probable cause, it's unreasonable. Now, the district court, they looked at it and said, well, listen, it falls within what's called the automobile exception. The courts have made up these exceptions. The one is called the automobile and or the community caretaking exception. And the district court said, listen, it's, you know, it's an automobile. It's a community caretaking process. Therefore, it falls under this exception to the Fourth Amendment that the Fourth Amendment doesn't actually say. Again, the courts made this up. Now, this apparently went up to the circuit court. And when the circuit court looked at it, they said, listen, yeah, this actually is a search. The court said, to determine whether a Fourth Amendment violation has occurred, we asked two primary questions. First, whether the alleged government conduct constitutes a search within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. And second, whether it was reasonable. Now, the circuit court apparently held that chalking of a tire is a search under the Fourth Amendment. You are searching to see if a person is going to break the law, right? The search is, we've marked it, we're going to come back as a search to see. Okay. The question then becomes, well, is it reasonable? The circuit court went on to say, because tire chalking is a search that defendants conduct without an authorizing warrant, it is presumptively unreasonable. However, the warrant requirement is subject only to a few specifically established and well-delineated exceptions. Now, this is where things get a little odd because the court goes on to say, generally, when a search is conducted for an administrative purpose and pursuant to a regulatory scheme, such as inspecting a home for compliance with the municipal housing code, the government may justify a warrantless search by showing that it met the reasonable legislative or administrative standards. Again, a court-made-up standard that does not comply with the Fourth Amendment. Now, this is about balancing needs and invasions and all that. Here's what the bottom line. The circuit court said, in concluding otherwise, the district court went astray in three significant respects. First, it treated plaintiff's Fourth Amendment claim as a broad challenge to the city's ability to regulate parking through its police powers. The issue here, rather, is whether the city's chosen means for exerting the civil authority violates the Fourth Amendment. Second, it also seemingly placed the burden on Taylor, the person suing, to demonstrate that the city's parking ordinance was unreasonable. But once Taylor established that tire chalking is a search, the burden shifted to defendants to establish the reasonableness of the search by demonstrating the applicability of an exception to the warrant requirement. Third, the district court applied the wrong law when it relied on Brown v. Texas to condone defendants' tire chalking practice, stating the city's use of chalk was reasonable because it is in the public interest to enforce parking regulations, and the severity of the interference with individual liberty is minimal. Basically, the court said, listen, the circuit court said the district court blew it. And for those reasons, they reversed the district court's ruling for the city. They granted qualified immunity to the parking officer, saying, listen, because this is kind of uncharted waters, the individual could not would get a level of immunity. I have problems with qualified immunity. This is maybe one area where there's a possibility, but they then remanded it for further proceedings. Now, I find this interesting, again, for a couple of reasons. It's someone standing up saying, wait a second, what right do you have to search my vehicle with chalk without any probable cause that I'm committing a crime? And although she didn't win at the district court, apparently at this point at the circuit court, she at least got it. She is proceeding farther. It's not done yet. But I found it very interesting to see someone with a unique point of view, which one I hadn't thought of. Hey, chalking is a search, therefore, is it reasonable? So I want to follow this. I want to go a little deeper. Of course, I've also found some more places in here where the courts have used their own opinions to supersede the law. That's nothing new. That happens all the time. But I wanted to leave you with, at least here we have a circuit court saying, no, chalking someone's car is a search. You have to come up with a reasonable reason to do that. And simply saying, well, it's parking enforcement, apparently isn't good enough, according to the Sixth Circuit of the United States, Sixth Circuit Court of the United States. And I suppose that's as good a place as any to wrap up this program. Now, it's interesting because a lot of these things we talk about come from a study and an understanding of the Constitution, which is why I want you to head over to constitutionscholars.com. Become a student of the Constitution. Learn more, understand more, and share more of that information with friends and family and neighbors. If we want to stop digging this hole to tyranny, we start by educating ourselves so we can stop those who are doing, first of all, we stop ourselves from doing the digging. Then we can stop others from doing the digging. And then we can figure out how to crawl out of the tyrannical place that we are and once again become the freest nation the world has ever seen. And I think that's a pretty good goal to attain. So I want to remind you, you can find out more about my show, get all the latest podcasts. If you go to the menu at AmericaOutloud.com, look under shows or schedule, you'll find the Constitution Study, and you can be in the know.
Hey, you'll stay out of jail. Love the neighbors and have a few good friends.